Welcome to the DBS Films Podcast, a behind-the-scenes look into making indie films. Learn from DBS Films about their process, tips, and fun stories that all come with making multiple movies a reality.
Hey everybody, welcome to DBS Films Podcast. My name is Kellen. With me as always is my brother Brendan, and together we make movies with DBS Films. In today's episode, we are going to go ahead and basically give you guys a breakdown of our 12th horror feature film, which we just wrapped on this week. Right now we're calling it Into the Forest 2.0 as a working title, but in these next two episodes we basically want to give you a breakdown of, you know, what it was like, what we learned, what we're expecting from it, and just give you guys the insights and the knowledge that come with making your 12th feature film. So with that being said, be sure to take a look at us online. Be sure to take a look at us on our Discord channel, because that is the place to be. We make movies for our fans, with our fans. We have 20 plus members from the Discord in this film working on it in some capacity. So again, if you want to be part of this, if you want to be part of the actual inside looks at our movie and our studio, the Discord is the place to be. So really hopping right into this, you know, I kind of wanted to just get overall feelings of the shoot. You know, I know what I think the big one to me is, which I think is going to be the big thing for you, but that was a pretty smooth and easy shoot.
Yeah, I mean, we shot for 8 days, and I honestly think that, I mean, we could have shot this in 6 days. The last 2 days, you know, we had one day dedicated to pickups, just fixing things, and we had one day dedicated to the interviewers. And I think like the biggest struggle was we had like this outdoor location, and I had tried to, you know, get an Airbnb for the cast and crew next to the location. And there was just like a discrepancy in how far away that Airbnb actually was. So we had to transport ourselves about 25, 30 minutes each way. And we did end up forgetting one piece of equipment once. So then that adds another hour to our time. So, you know, I think if we had a location that was on a location or something that was closer, I think we could have been even more faster, done the movie faster. But it was, you know, it was smooth. I mean, we came in there, we knew what we wanted to do. We planned it really well, and we just kind of executed. And the actors were absolutely phenomenal. They were able to go through these long scenes without any kind of, you know, breaks. We had a lot of one-ers that were 2 to 3 minutes. I know Brent had a one-er that was about 4 minutes and 30 seconds. So we never had a problem with them forgetting lines or not being in the spots they were supposed to. They did an absolute phenomenal job just blocking, you know, the scenes. And I honestly felt more pressure on this one just to, as the camera guy doing the found footage stuff, to make sure everyone's in focus, that I was blocking myself properly, that I was getting all these shots, because, you know, as you're going through a 3 or 4 minute one-er, you know, you got to make sure your focus is on, you got to make sure you're hitting the right marks and hitting the right people. So we get to 3 minutes of that 4 minute one-er, and I'd be like, oh man, like this last minute, can we get it? Can we get it? So it was a lot of pressure, but I mean, the cast, when you have a cast in there that knows what they're going to do, that has worked so hard in pre-production, you know, the goal is to make production very easy. Like, I should not have to give a lot of direction. Everyone should know where they need to go. And that allows me to just focus on blocking and just getting the most dynamic scenes we possibly can. That's what happened. And, you know, this was by far our smoothest shoot, to the point where, you know, I had no idea what to do with myself the last 2 days, because we were so far ahead of schedule that like I wasn't doing anything. So it was definitely a unique feeling. It's something that I want to recapture though, because there's a lot, like my stress level was much lower. And I think that allowed the actress to just really work on the performance as well.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. It was super smooth shoot. Like you mentioned, the only one little hiccup there was kind of having about a 25 minute gap in the distance from the actual shooting location to where we were kind of staying as like an Airbnb for everyone to just, you know, relax and decompress and whatnot. And the issue for me then was, you know, while I'm doing the onset editing, typically I can kind of walk out, see what's going on with the scene, walk back in, start editing. So there was kind of like a gap for me. However, really didn't pose that much of an issue because it's found footage. So, you know, we've mentioned found footage before, but I feel like it's a good time to kind of highlight the pros and cons of it and how we saw it play out really when it came to the actual shooting. You know, so we always say found footage. One of the biggest points, it's easy to edit because it's really drag and drop. for the most part, I was just kind of checking sound, making sure that things were good, making sure that we had a good cut, and then making sure that transitions were there. But really in cinematic, you know, there's a lot that you can do and it really kind of bogs you down. So even though I wasn't necessarily on site, you know, editing as much as I was in the past movies, was still able to basically get through the entire movie within that set time frame. And then, you know, you already kind of mentioned with the acting side of things, you know, there's a lot of pressure on our actors. And, you know, Andrew, Alexa, Jim, Brent, Howard, you know, basically every single role that was out there, a lot of the super fans came out. Alessia, Sammy, Gabs, Erica, Tatum, I'm going to do my best to try and nail every single one of them. Sabrina, McKee, all absolutely amazing roles coming out, knowing their lines. Everyone was prepped and prepared. But to kind of go back to this, you know, this was our first found footage that we were doing, that you were filming. So, you know, what were kind of the pros and cons as I was mentioning there? And what was your approach? Because, you know, found footage is different from cinematic.
Yeah, I mean, I really liked it. I felt like I was more part of the production because I was actively blocking with the actors. I was trying to figure out, you know, where I wanted to shoot, how I wanted to do it, how I wanted to zoom in, sort of like office style to get reactions from people. But just like the actors had to, you know, nail their wonders, I had to nail all my stuff, all my steps too. And, you know, when you have these actors who are giving these amazing performances, especially Jim, who had a lot of emotionally heavy scenes, man, I was so nervous. I was like, man, if this guy gives me a scene, I'm like out of focus, or I can't capture this, or I miss something. You know, there's only so many takes they can do at that emotional level. So it was kind of like an interesting thing for me. I had to kind of put myself up. A lot of movement. My body's a lot more sore than usual just because I was only on the shoulder rig the entire time. I was running around the woods because I was pretty much Steven and at some points Georgie in the movie. So it was on me to just run around as fast as I could. But that being said, it's just a lot more fun for me. Instead of having like a tripod or some of the other cinematic stuff, you know, I love the shoulder rig. I think it adds a gritty element to it. But it's just like creativity. Like we go into it and we try and figure out where these actors were going to be, how are they going to move, you know, what shots I wanted to highlight, who I wanted to highlight, were all kind of unique things for me. So it's really, you couldn't really create a shot list. It was more like, all right, let's see how, you know, this plays out. Then I started to block them. Then we did a couple of rehearsals on like where I was going to be. And then we just started to run it. And they were just, I mean, they were so great that all the actors were so great at doing everything they needed to do that we had multiple wonders that were 3 to 4 minutes and we got it done. And when you can get those done, you can get them done quickly. Some of those are like 4 or 5% of your movie if you're making an hour and 20 minute movie. So to be able to knock out a 4 minute shot in 4 minutes is just, you know, absolutely incredible. And we had multiple takes where that was the actual case.
Yeah, I think it really ended up being a smooth production, just in the sense of, you know, you would look at a scene and then when I drag it on the timeline, that's a 3 minute scene. So really something that I find that, you know, it's really incredible when you are able to execute it. But let's talk real quick the downside of found footage, because I think one of the benefits that we have now is, you know, you're so honed for the technical that the big death throw, I would say, of a found footage movie is you have an issue while you're filming. You have something technical. It's completely out of focus. There is a bad X or Y or Z happens and you don't have another take. So I would say, you know, let's quickly talk about the risk of it. And I think what we were able to do is, since you have so much experience filming, a lot of the big risk of found footage was mitigated, I think, just, you know, from the experience that you have.
Yeah, I would really agree. I think that while I would push indie filmmakers to doing found footage, it could be a double-edged sword. If a mic drops off, we had a lav mic completely fall off an actor, and that is extremely difficult for me to tell because I have 2-channel headphones and I'm picking up, the lav mics are so powerful, they pick up both actors. So it's really, really hard for me to tell if a lav falls off or if a lav has issues. So if you're doing, you know, a 4 minute wonder and the lav falls off, it's hard for me to see that. You know, it could be devastating because I was really only taking I get like two good takes and then we do two more. And some scenes I only did two takes because they were 4 or 5 minute long scenes, or they're just very emotionally intense scenes. So you have to be dialed in. Like, your settings have to be right. Your focus has to be right. Your blocking has to be right. If something happens with the sound, if something happens with the picture, you don't have the ability to cut around it like you do in cinematic. In cinematic, I'll always just keep rolling the takes, even if there's something wrong, or if I miss focus, or there's something, you know, my framing is not correct, right? I'll still do it because I can always cut around that. With this one, you don't have that opportunity, especially if you have a lot of actors moving around, hitting their marks. If they miss those marks, you just have to reset. You don't have any other option. So if you get it right and you're honed in on what you need to do, it could definitely save time. But yeah, the worst thing you do is go back to the editing, or, you know, go into post-production, just not have the material that you need because you just can't, there's no cut points. Like, you literally have to use what you have. So I think the experience plays a part, and I was always checking, you know, I do the scene, I listen to it, and I watch it on the camera, and then I give the thumbs up and we try another take. I'd be like, all right, this one's good, let's move on. But yeah, if you don't have that experience, if you don't know what you're looking for, and that really just comes from editing. I know what sound problems I can fix, which is like rustling. I know what sound problems I cannot fix, which is a mic falling down through someone's shirt or through their, you know, all the way through them. Very difficult to fix that. Focus issues are going to be a problem. But a lot of that stuff is just coming from an experience of editing, which is why we always say you have to edit your own footage, because you can see these mistakes. You can make sure you know what you're doing. So when you're just hyper aware of these issues that are unfixable, when you're on set, so you can just completely avoid them.
Yeah. And I mean, that's always the big one. And again, that's why we highly recommend, the big thing that you want to go ahead and do is make sure you can have any kind of onset editor so you can kind of catch these problems. Because, you know, the last thing you want to do is exactly what you mentioned. You're in post-production, you finally sit down, you take a look, and you simply cannot use the footage and you have to basically force it together. And again, for found footage, that's never going to come off as a smooth or clean look. So with that being said, I kind of wanted to kind of go back to a few things that we were talking about in the episode before, of like what we were expecting. And I think one of the big things that you were pushing forward was really kind of the tone and the atmosphere of the movie, just kind of in how serious it was, what the look of it would be, because, you know, you did mention that there's kind of a balance between the campiness of a horror movie versus the serious appeal that distributors are kind of looking for. So I wanted to get your opinions on, you know, do you think that you're able to capture the grittiness of this movie and the way that you were looking for?
Yeah, I definitely think so. You know, the actors, we when doing all the pre-production, we made it very clear. I wanted a gritty movie. I wanted a dark movie. All upbeats are kind of removed. Now there's some like small little banter and joking in there, especially between Andrew and Dylan, those characters. But that was just more the relationship level as opposed to like the lore level. I thought everyone was super serious. It was a very gritty, realistic movie. And the scenes that really needed to highlight the grittiness, the ones that I really wanted to have an impact, I mean, we did one of them, and I remember the first take, I was like, oh my goodness, like, this is something that, like, is going to be absolutely brutal. So it'll be interesting to see the reaction that people have to this movie. It is not a happy movie at all. There's a lot of grief, a lot of characters. The Meredith character did a great job. Jim did a great job. There's just a lot of very unsettling things in this movie. But I mean, that was the point. We went from Shapeshifter, which was more lighthearted 70s, 80s style, to full pendulum swing over to something that's super dark and gritty. I think there's maybe some meeting in the middle, but I'll tell you what, I'd much rather direct these kind of movies. I think they're just more engaging. They seem to be like more my style. I enjoyed this movie, directing this and working with the actors, much better than I did in Shapeshifter. So I think, you know, obviously depending on feedback, we want to work with people who like our movies, but I think this is just kind of my style. It's a more emotional movie. I think it's easier to get a performance when people are just coming from a place of just absolute despair and sadness. So it's just, that was just my feeling But man, there are some scenes in there where I was just like, oh my goodness, like this thing was just absolutely ridiculous. And the actors just they did just a phenomenal job at bringing these characters to life for the first time. I mean, we've had glimpses of really good scenes in a lot of our other movies, you know, scenes where I'm like, all right, this is going to be pretty good. Then the actors do it and you kind of get that energy in the air and you're like, oh wow, like this was really, really good. For this movie, it seemed like every single scene was like that. It had a lot of energy. The cast worked well. It worked really well together. The blocking and the movement, the camera was extremely dynamic. And I mean, for the first time, we had a lot of scenes. Like we had a scene where they kind of cut their hand to start like the sacrifice process for the witch to bring out the witch. And this was just a placeholder scene. I was just like, we just need something that's just a little bit uncomfortable. You know, cutting your hand, it's done in a million movies. It's a trope. And, you know, in my head, I was like, it just needs to be good enough to show that they're like cutting their hand and putting the blood in this like little pot thing so they can summon the witch. And I'll tell you what, that scene somehow turned out to be one of the best scenes in the movie. It's a oner. We go all the way around the circle. They're all cutting their hands. It's intense. There's tension. They're right about to start and conjure this witch. And I was like, wow, this is like a small little downbeat scene that we kind of put in there just as a little filler. And it's just extremely dynamic, extremely well acted, and just one of the better scenes in the movie. And I think that just comes down to, you know, how prepared the actors were, how open they were to direction, how open they were to blocking. And we took something that should have been just a very easy scene that people kind of, you know, glossed over and said it's all right, to something that I think is really going to kick off the climax of this movie.
Yeah, no, I mean, I definitely agree. And I think it is really on the dark and grittier side of things when it comes to just a lot of the scenes. I mean, you really start to get going. I think, you know, Jim did a fantastic job in kind of capturing Nelson as the growing danger in the movie. And then, you know, even once you get to the beginning of the climax where the witch appears, there's just a lot of heavy, heavy moments in the sense where, you know, this movie does have a lot of weight to it. I think the next thing I kind of want to talk about that really noticed, and I think this is not, you know, more so just the style or more so even that it's found footage, but just us improving as filmmakers. And it's something that I'm constantly going to stress, and I think we'll constantly stress too, is it's paced incredibly well. I mean, this is a very, very quick movie. You're basically hopping right into it with action. You're hopping right into it with a good intro. You go right from there to basically, you know, they're at the location. Then next thing you know, there's another scare where they run into someone. Then they get back to the house and then there's another scare. And I just think, you know, we've really learned that you want to constantly make this thing move. And I think one of the big issues with found footage movies that I think at least I notice is found footage movies are usually very, very slow, and then they explode into one scene at the end. You know, that's when like the things go bad. So usually it's a very slow explosion. And I think we took our elements of cinematic, and it's probably, you know, just again, not having experience with filmmaking for a lot of other found footage developers. But to me, it's this nice, smooth, you know, arc where just the scares are increasing, but they're only increasing due to, you know, the gravity of the situation, but there's always some type of, you know, heartbeat or pulse to push the story along really throughout the movie. So I think it's going to be paced incredibly well. I mean, just watching the rough, it flies, and like, you're always looking down and you're like, wow, we're like, you know, X minutes in and you know, don't even think it, which is the best thing that you can have.
Yeah. I think that this one, you can really see our improvement in learning from the pacing from The Shapeshifter. I think The Shapeshifter is a really well-paced movie and moved very, very quickly. And we have that pacing here. If anything, it moves even faster. And then you can see parts of like the murder house in this and the downbeats. So like anytime we have a downbeat, the downbeats in this movie are usually just interviews, right? So it's like action, action, action. They find a local and they interview them. Action, action, action. Find a local, interview them. And then you bring on the Nelson character and he tells his story. But how we get away with making these very interesting is like, they're just really good stories. And the actors did an absolute phenomenal job. They're very heart-wrenching, gut-wrenching stories about loss or suffering. And, you know, they're just engaging. So I'm really excited to see the fan feedback on some of these, you know, interviews that are 3-4 minutes long, but they're just very, very dynamic. They're very well acted. And I think they tell the story of the lore. Going back to the first Into the Forest, the problem was people didn't know what was going on. And I think we really clarified it. We made it very, you know, straight and narrow. And you're seeing the story told through multiple characters until you find the Nelson character who has experienced this firsthand. And I think that makes him even more engaging. And the way he portrayed that scene in the trailer where he's telling his story, I think really kind of thrusts this movie into the second act. You're like, well, this guy's really got something here. And he's the one that kind of pulls the crew down into the rabbit hole of, okay, yes, there's abductions, there's children missing. But the reason these children are missing is they're being taken by a witch. And I think that's a very powerful midpoint hook. And the way he pulled it off and the way we did it, I think was very clever. But it comes from just experience. I think you could see a lot of the stuff that we did before in this movie. But this one, we kind of, you know, took the next step and took, you know, we made incremental progress on it. And as a whole, the whole movie's better.
Yeah, it really does add such a huge overall benefit to the movie and the film itself. I think, you know, again, we're just kind of going into the big picture items here. Next episode, we'll hop into kind of just a day-by-day breakdown of, you know, how the shoot went. I would say, you know, again, this was a weird one because usually we're up against that time crunch. I mean, in Murder House and Shapeshifter, we had the time crunch on us, but we always managed it. You know, it's like, okay, we have to do this. We have to do this. We have to do this. And this one, you know, I feel like we were kind of walking around like, what's going to go wrong? What's going to happen? What's going to be the issue? And I think it comes down to the best thing you can do is plan for nothing wrong to happen. And hey, give yourself enough time to have, you know, to fix whatever happens that's wrong. You know, basically giving yourself that more time. I think this was one of the first sets where, you know, really we didn't have much go wrong. You know, like I said, maybe there was like a slight delay here or there just with like an item or anything. But typically when it comes to just, and by go wrong, I mean, you know, usually we can have some time so we're filming and it just takes a lot longer for us to get a shot or whatnot. I would say we did have some slight difficulty during a climax scene of kind of just blocking it a bit. But again, it came out perfectly right, you know, and it wasn't really even that much time. But this was an odd shoot to me because we were almost kind of looking at each other and we're like, don't say anything. Don't say how smooth this is going because you're going to jinx it, obviously. But, you know, I think it's, as a filmmaker, you have to plan for everything to go wrong. And I feel like this was the case where pretty much everything went right. So, you know, do you want to kind of talk about how you have to plan for these things and how it was kind of a little bit of a weird thing to have this time and to not, you know, be like, okay, if we move this here, or if we do this, and then, you know, the end of the night for Murder House, we stayed up all night. We got as much film as we possibly could and we left. The end of the Shapeshifter, you know, we were filming until the sunrise and then we basically left. This was the first time we actually had a wrap party where we were able to be done with the movie, have enough time to just kind of decompress and everything and, you know, go on from there. So I think it's more so with us being better as filmmakers, you know, ideally we'll keep running into this, but I think, you know, you always have to warn any filmmakers out there, always plan for something to go wrong because it will, especially if you've never done this before, because things are going to take way longer than you can ever expect.
Yeah. I mean, I hope this is the new normal. I really do. I think it was a combination. We got lucky. And I think it's a combination of, we understand how to do things now and we've pretty much dealt with almost all the problems that you possibly can. So, you know, when I'm creating the script, when I'm creating the schedule, I'm thinking about things that could go wrong, what could go right. You know, if this goes wrong, what are we doing? Because really, once you get on set, it's all about problem solving. Very few things go right. It's just about compromise and trying to figure out, you know, ways to, you know, solve problems. But this one, man, it was just like I said before, every single scene just turned out really well. And it was a simple script. It was simple in like the woods and everything we did before. We did sort of like the seance scene that we pulled from Murder House. We've used torches before. A lot of the stuff we've done before, but really it was like everything was really, really smooth. And then we went and I looked at the footage, like expecting, like, usually there's a couple scenes where like things won't like work and we'll have to reshoot it. And there's just really only one scene that we needed a small little pickup for, which is also like very unusual. So I'm hoping this is the new normal, because obviously my stress level, especially towards the end of this shoot, was much lower than usual because we weren't fighting against time. And, you know, that's hopefully the new normal. I'm really excited. I hope it's a turning stone because everything was so smooth. You know, we had one actor drop out, and once again, just problem solving. You know, I texted Kelly, I said, can we get someone else in there? And he got someone else in there like immediately. And then really the only other stressful thing is when your computer broke, when it like froze, and we're like, oh, should we pull out all the hard drives or what should we do with this? And then the last night we had like a small little scene, little downbeat scene that should have taken like 20 minutes. And, you know, there's like all these kids like yelling around us. And then, you know, cause we had like nothing charged, the D block on the camera died. So we had to charge that. Then the D block on the light died. We had to charge that. And then people were like driving these loud cars around. And we're just making jokes. I was like, this is the final shot. Should have taken 20 minutes. It took about 2 hours just cause all this crazy stuff is going on. And I even made the joke. I was like, watch this. Once I turn this camera off, everything's going to go quiet. And immediately, right when I clicked it, everyone just shut up. But that's just filmmaking. The minute you turn that camera on, all of a sudden planes are just going to be like, this is our flight path. People are just going to decide to start chopping down trees. Everyone's like, hey, I got this new car. I'm just going to go drive it up and down the road. So you have to always keep that in consideration. Hence why we really like shooting out in the woods, just because it's more quiet. But even this location, there's trucks driving up and down on that road, even for the interview scenes with the Discord people, to, you know, find a location that wasn't being blasted by these trucks that looked urban or it looked kind of cool was almost impossible. So, you know, I'm hoping this is the new normal, but like these things that I'm complaining about now were super small in the grand scheme of things. And, you know, we did have that wrap party at the end. It was great. We were never really rushed in there. And so, you know, I really hope this is the standard moving forward, because I think the low amount of stress allowed the actors to really give a good performance.
Yeah, I completely agree. You know, I really do think it was one of those things where, you know, the slight issues that we had and like the one VHS scene took us like forever to do. And then we just finally figured out, oh, we don't actually need it. So there's just a bunch of little things that like those are so textbook filmmaking, but they only actually happen to some of the later scenes. But I think it was something, you know, that I kind of want to touch on that you just mentioned. A lot of these scenes, whether it's cinematic or whether it's, you know, was a past found footage thing that we did, we had experience doing them before. So I think, you know, really what it added up was the experience in doing them before. And then the other thing I want to talk about is, you know, I think we understand now our scheduling. You know, I think the scheduling now is really iron tight in the sense of, you know, that Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, you know, we got on set Monday. Tuesday was our intro, which is huge. Wednesday was a big climax, and Thursday was a big climax. So coming into that Friday and Saturday, you know, we basically were just picking off the scraps. And I think that's such an inverse of what we started off doing, where, you know, we would kind of save the climax to the ends, or we would push them back. And, you know, I know we did it in Shapeshifter. We did it to some degree in Murder House, but I feel like in Shapeshifter, we really locked in that plot of, you know, we nail the intro. We nail the, like, we basically do like a little bit of a warm up. We nail the intro. We nail the climax. We nail the other big scenes. And then we pick off the rest of the fillers. But do you want to talk about scheduling and just how that can set you up for this easy type of shoot? Because I think that really played a big key into it. Because again, you know, let's say we have those issues on the Tuesday or Wednesday. We got 7 days to make it work.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like the scheduling is the most important thing. And unfortunately, it's twofold. Number one, unless you've done a lot of these movies, you don't understand how to schedule them properly, because you just don't know how long a scene's going to take. I've done pretty much every single scene now, like you can think of, that's not like some kind of crazy like car action scene. But like the Ouija board scene in Murder House took a long time. But now I like, all right, if I could do something similar. And I'd probably say the climax scene with Nelson in this movie is very similar to the Ouija board scene. It's all the actors moving around one kind of like object or in this one general vicinity. So I knew how to do that. But, you know, stacking the schedule like we do now, which is like day 2, 3, and 4, the really heavy days, these are the scenes that are going to be the hardest, is beneficial for two reasons. Number one, if you happen to mess those up or need to do pickups or need to do anything, you have the opportunity to do so. And number two, once you're done with those things, the actors know these are hard scenes. And I make it very clear, this is like game time. Like this is the time where we got to get this stuff done. Once they get it done, they kind of relax a little bit. And you can really build momentum with the small stuff. You can go very, very, very quickly through the small stuff because it's very easy. It's just set up and go, set up and go, set up and go. The actors start to feel that energy, that momentum, and they keep going. So you can really control the pace of the set and get a lot done in a short amount of time because you don't have to stop and set up for the bigger climax scenes. Like we had these torches, we had this fire that needed to be lit. Every setup and breakdown took a lot of time. Where the smaller stuff's like, all right, look, in little downbeat scene, knock it out. Little downbeat scene, knock it out. Transition scene, knock it out. But, you know, your gut is going to tell you to keep the hard stuff towards the end. And that's just like, I think it's just human nature. You're not confident about it. You want to save it to the end. You're like, well, let me just build up like my confidence level. Shoot it at the end. Wait till the last second. You know, it's like we're back in middle school, you know, wait till the project's due to do, you know, essentially the project. But I see it in a ton of filmmakers. I see it in Hollywood filmmakers. They always save the hardest for last, and your actors are going to be tired. You're going to be tired. People are going to start to be stressed out. People are starting to get, you know, short tempers. And that's just not a situation you want on the last day of shooting. You know, you don't want to be everyone tired and exhausted and ready to go home. And you have this giant climax scene to film because they're going to phone it in. They're just not going to do their job. And, you know, you might not even get everything that you need. And then you don't have the opportunity to do pickups because you're wrapping them the next day. And if you watch a lot of our, you know, movies from the Hateful Eight, this is what we did. And, you know, our climaxes suffer from it. So really do one day. The first day of your shoots, easy stuff. Get everyone comfortable with each other. Get everyone comfortable in the project. Get get momentum starting to come up, and then day 2, 3, 4, really hit them hard. The intro had its own day. The climax had its own day. A very technical scene with like lights going off in the woods had its own day. And then once we were done with those days, I remember driving home and I was like, all right, we got like the hard stuff down. Now it's time to just crank out all this stuff. And we did. And the last 2 days, we were so far ahead of schedule, we barely had a little bit of stuff to do. So we went out there, we got it done. And, you know, it was a very, very smooth shoot.
Yeah, I mean, scheduling really plays a lot into it. And again, you got through the major hump and then you're good to go. So with that, I kind of wanted to, you know, wrap up. I think one of the other big things that came about this one, to me, this was the first movie that we had that really was flexing the power of the Discord and the power of the DBS community. Again, we're going to have over 20 people working on this in some degree. A lot of them are coming out in actors. Our intro girl, our intro mom played a massive role in the intro. You know, we had Alessia stepped up massive, as you were mentioning, where we had someone unfortunately drop and they said, yes, I'll be there within like a 24-hour notice. And they absolutely killed that role. We have our interviewers. Tatum did a fantastic job on the makeup. You know, we had Howard, as always, doing a great job. And I think, you know, to me, what's nice with that is having people who were very, very motivated about the project and were about it. And again, not to say, you know, I think honestly, I would say we even lucked out with the main characters too, because again, you know, they were very, very committed to the roles. And it's just something I think as a filmmaker, you have to understand it's going to be different for you than it is for anyone who is an actor. Not every actor is going to treat this like the passion project or the baby that is yours. This could just be something for them to go and get done. And I think this set, you know, we really lucked out with the entire team that we had. But I think we're also going to get more consistent with the Discord because, again, you know, they're already passionate about it. They're already, you know, for this. They're really thankful. They're basically like, tell me what you need to do. Like, we're like, hey, if you could fall down, that would be great. And they're like, I can fall down as many times as I want. So it's really something where it's great to see how having passion on the set can really help the movie. And I think, you know, I'd have to say this was probably our most passionate set, you know, not that, again, the other sets were less passionate or anything like that, but it's, you know, it's a role for people. It's not the entire thing. Whereas I feel like we had an incredible amount of buy-in, an incredible amount of commitment, not only from the DBS Discord, but also just from our main actors as well, too. And I think that just really goes a long way in making the movie special.
Yeah, and it's really what I look for. And I really tried to hone in on actors who are just really passionate. I always remember my Zoom when I Zoomed Andrew, who plays Bo in this movie. And he's like, dude, I just want to do this. He's like, this is what I really want to do. I really like this script. I like what you guys are all about. Like, I will do whatever needs to be done. And like, you can't ask for a better answer to a question than that. And I felt like that was everybody's like motivations in this. You know, we all gave it our heart and soul. Everyone did a great job. You know, I had no doubts with the Discord, you know. When I worked with pre-production, with Jessica, with Lizzie, with the interviewers, everyone was just so passionate and committed, and they took my advice. I was like, hey, like, try and make these characters your own. Like, you know, feel free to change some of the stuff up. They were sending me lines. I know Brent, who had the 4-minute dialogue, sent me a ton of lines, and we, you know, we try and incorporate some of them. And, you know, just that kind of like collaboration between director and actor is so powerful. And it's really what I try to cultivate. The problem is it's just like to get that out of people is a little bit difficult. Cause number one, a lot of people just don't want to do that work. And number two, a lot of people are just a little bit shy. You know, they don't want to step on the director's vision. So I try and break that down a little bit, but the Discord had no problem doing that. Cause I think they knew what we were about. There's a little bit more level of comfort in there. And you know, I was pretty worried about the intro, but then I started Zooming with Jessica and Lizzie and I was like, all right, you know, I will give this, you know, intro its full day. But I think they're going to kill it. And they came out there and did an absolute phenomenal job. And the intro is probably going to be one of our better, if not our best intro, from the stuff that I've seen. So I think that's just, you know, what you said is absolutely on point, where it's just find passionate people. I think passion is what I look for most at this point. I think we can get to the point with our experience to direct you in the way you need to go, and get, you know, a good performance out of you. But it's like, you have to be committed to this role. You have to be committed to, you know, doing this project, because yes, it may only be one day for you to come out here, but you know, I've been working on this for 3 or 4 months. There's a lot of people who've been working on this project a lot longer, and you know, the risk is there. But, you know, thankfully, and I'm forever grateful for everyone who worked on this project, because I do think this is going to be our best movie. I do think this is going to be a massive step up for us. And, you know, the energy on set, which is absolutely incredible. Usually I'm tired and, you know, exhausted after these shoots. But, you know, I was talking to one of our actors for the next movie yesterday, and you know, we're starting to get this thing going. We're starting to write this movie. I'm already starting to watch movies and get the next one done, as opposed to being like, oh man, I need like a couple weeks off, that was such a crazy experience. I'm more motivated now to just get the next one done.
So with that being said, I think a great place to wrap up here would be, you know, what are we kind of expecting for the Into the Forest 2.0. I mean, again, we have a very solid rough right now. We don't need any pickups, which is massive, you know, in my opinion. I think we'll go through and confirm we don't need any pickups, but I can't see anywhere for it. So what's kind of the game plan for this one? You know, when are we trying to get it out? I know there was talk of the Florida Film Fest. What's kind of the idea that we're doing here? And then, as you already mentioned, we're looking to get right back into it and make another movie. So what's kind of the game plan for the next 2 months of the year?
Yeah, so we're going to be very picky with our festival runs just because of the time deadlines and the amount of time it takes to actually get these things done. We're going to try and get it in the Florida Film Festival, which is local. I think the odds are extremely low. Number one, Florida Film Festival does not like horror movies. And number two, I don't think they really like found footage movies at all. So that being said, you never know. And that is a game changer. That is something that will change not only the trajectory of DBS, but the trajectory of everybody who is involved in this project, because that is an Oscar accredited festival. But I'm not getting my hopes up. I want this one to be up, or at least in quality control, by December 31st, which I think it should be done. I was looking at the footage last night, and there's really not that much to work on. That being said, I do want to get Shapeshifter done before this one, just out of principle. But I think it's going to go up there, and I think it's got a good shot to try and get a better deal from Shudder. We're going to explore that option. If not, it'll have the full distribution that the other ones have, which is just cable and anything else that's streaming. But, you know, we'll see what happens. I'm excited for this one. I think that people are going to like this one. And I think that, you know, the actors and everyone who worked on this are going to get a ton of exposure. I'm hoping to see, you know, them pick up extra jobs or extra gigs or really, you know, take a step up in their acting career. And if we can just leverage them and push them in the right direction, I think that's a win. I love going back and looking at all the actors we worked with before, seeing what they're doing now. It's always really cool to see them growing as we're growing as well.
Yeah, it really is great. And again, absolutely amazing shoot. Huge congratulations and thanks to everyone involved. Made it the smoothest shoot, in my opinion, the best movie ever. So we'll keep you updated as we progress with Into the Forest 2.0. But until then, have a good one.